This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 155 for November 6, 2008. On today's show, the Left 4 Dead demo has risen, Fallout 3 beats Oblivion, play the Red Alert 3 guessing game, Activision explains dropping Ghostbusters, EA and THQ take economic hits, Bill Roper finds a new home, Stardock announces a new game, Intel spills details on the new Core i7, etc., etc. All that and more, plus your questions after the break. Hi everyone, I'm Dan Stapleton, PC Gamer's Reviews Editor. We've also got Logan Decker, our Executive Editor. Evan Lottie, our Associate Editor.
What's going on, guys? I've got like 3 flights in 4 days. I'm kind of going crazy over here.
Josh Augustine, our Intern.
Hey, hey.
And Andy Bauman, our Producer.
Hi, how's it going?
And Gary Whitta would be with us right now, except he's too busy playing the Left 4 Dead demo. Which I can see him on Steam playing it right now. Asked him if he wanted to podcast or if he was too busy playing killing zombies, and he responded one word: zombies. So we'll have to go without.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
Yes, so we'll have to go without him for today. I'm sure he'll be eager to share his impressions of it later.
Knowing Left 4 Dead, he's going to be gone for weeks.
Yeah, well, given his level of addiction to Team Fortress 2. This is a bad scene for him. This is
gonna be ugly.
It's like having to split your time between crack and heroin.
And if you combine them and do them all together, you OD in a really terrible whirlwind of death.
Oh. And it makes you wonder if you're addicted to both of those things, which one, like, I mean, do you have to have both, or can you get? I don't know. But anyway.
Hey, that's a good question. Yeah, if you're on one, do you still crave the other?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they might cancel each other out. Left 4 Dead will satisfy or satiate his Team Fortress 2 cravings for a little while.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it reminds me of these movies. I totally forgot what it's called, but it's like they inject these girls with heroin, and they get them addicted, and so they have to like stick around as like sex slaves.
High School Musical.
But I'm thinking this is the perfect metaphor for the game industry, especially WoW.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, we'll, 1 week from today, Lich King comes out.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Are you ready for that, Andy and Josh?
If I was Andy Salisbury.
I probably won't be coming in to work for a week, if that's cool.
Andy, don't you play WoW?
If I was Andy Salisbury, I'd definitely be excited.
I thought you did play.
Since I'm Andy Bauman, I don't have time to play World of Warcraft.
I thought you dabbled.
Yeah, I played it right when it first came out. Right. But
I just overheard you guys talking with Norm about one of the big release parties being nearby, so I'm excited to go to that.
Yeah, there's a big release party in San Francisco at a GameStop, I think, and it's going to have team members there to sign stuff. You know, like your chest. I'm sure they'll sign that.
Yes. But can they tattoo it on me?
Awesome.
It's the same thing. You just have to break the pen first.
Wouldn't you guys rather come to my birthday party next week? No?
Yeah.
Anyone?
No one's going to come to Andy's birthday party because they're all going to be playing Lich King. Oh.
The Lich King will come out of your cake.
Oh, epic.
But Left 4 Dead demo. Who's played? I know Logan hasn't had time today to play it. I guess Evan hasn't had time to play it today. I played through really quick. I played like it's not a very long demo. It's just the first two acts of one of the four campaigns. It takes place in a hospital where I guess you're trying to get to a hospital. So you don't get to the hospital in the first two acts. So if you play through as single player, it takes about, 15 minutes to get through. If you're not taking your time killing like every single zombie. But it gives you a good taste. I still need to, get somebody to actually play with me. Nobody has time to play with me. No, we're actually this is one of our famous fourth week podcasts, so we're all kind of under the gun. So, not everyone around here has had time to jump in yet. But it really, if you play it single player, you're not really getting the full experience. I mean, it's still fun, yeah. But you're not. It's not nearly as intense as it is with four people, especially because the AI tones down the number of zombies it sends at you because there's only one of you, and you have three AI buddies, but they're just not nearly as proficient at zombie killing as people are. But we highly encourage you to check it out. I guess it's only available today if you pre-ordered on Steam. So that was some good incentive there on Val's part. One of the things that kind of baffles me about this demo is that once the game comes out on the 19th, they're turning off the demo. The demo will just go away.
Hmm. Well, that is interesting.
Yeah, it seems a little odd. I mean, you would think they'd want that out there for people to get their first taste and get hooked. But for some reason, it's only, and I guess it's coming online for everybody else in the next couple days. I think it might be like a 4-day exclusive period for people that pre-ordered.
I can say that if there's one game that will catch on fire through word of mouth, it'll be that one.
Right. But that doesn't even need word of mouth. Have you seen all the billboards everywhere? If anyone's been in like the San Francisco Muni like tunnels, like every other ad is for Left 4 Dead. It's kind of creepy.
That's cool. I like when I see ads about games, out in the real world.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It makes me feel accepted.
Well, there was a Fallout 3 took out a full page ad in the back of the back page of the New York Times yesterday. It was huge.
Wow.
Entire page. Yeah.
Andy, have you seen any Left 4 Dead ads in Salt Lake?
No, there's never any game ads in Salt Lake. There's only ads for ski goggles.
I wonder like how much, because like, they spent like $10 million advertising Left 4 Dead. I'm wondering how much of a nationwide campaign that buys you, or if they're just concentrating on a few major cities like San Francisco.
Yeah, I remember when I came for Showdown and driving down the 101. There was the Spore billboard, and I was like, "Holy crap, Spore on a billboard! What is this crazy city?"
Well, we were saying the same thing. We don't see game billboards very often. I guess it's starting to become the next big thing, though. I guess they're really pushing into more mainstream advertising.
Yeah, I love seeing it because I guess I only get to see it when I'm on vacation, so it's kind of like it reminding me of being somewhere else, an exotic city, rather than.
Do you think that's because like Utah is kind of conservative with zombies, or
I think it has to do with just everything kind of takes longer to permeate here, like no matter what it is, and there's just not a lot of advertising you'll see. Like, you don't even see big movies take out huge, like, spots of buildings or billboards, like you'll see in a bigger city. So I think it's just the market just doesn't, like, yeah. No one, like...
Mormons aren't into zombies.
Exactly. Mormons wouldn't buy a rated M zombie game. I didn't want to say it, but there it is.
Church has a strong anti-zombie stance.
Threw it out there.
Yeah. They're very anti-undead.
No, I don't know. That is until the undead rise under the temple and take over the city.
Yeah, then we'll see.
That's the movie I want to make, but time will tell.
Well, speaking of Fallout 3, which Logan mentioned earlier, that there's Bethesda just sent out a press release today saying that so far across all three platforms they've shipped 4.7 million units of the game.
God,
that's a big number for like a first week or week or two out there. I know that's not how many they've sold. That's how many they've shipped out to retailers. But they have said they have grossed $300 million in sales so far.
Oh my
goodness! God,
do you know if the PC sales are strong?
I think they said that the PC sales accounted for about 17%.
Is that good? That doesn't sound good.
I mean I'm actually not sure. I mean, what's 17%? 17% of 300 million is not peanuts by any means.
It's almost 20 million, yeah.
Yeah,
it's been in the top three games on Steam for the past, since it released. So. Yeah.
What's 17% of 4.7 million?
Somebody bring up math? That was not cool.
Is this 800,000, I think?
Yeah, that's very respectable for a PC game.
Nobody said anything about math when I came out on this podcast.
So apparently, that is more revenue than the entire Fallout franchise to date has raised.
Oh, God.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's over Fallout 1, Fallout 2, Fallout Tactics, Fallout Brotherhood of Steel. Yeah, that's all of them right there. So that's, you know, four games didn't come close to this. In the UK, the sales over the first week were 57% higher than Oblivion, which I think is huge considering how well that game did.
Yeah.
Also, like, everybody in that game had an English accent, and you know, you'd think that would sell better over there. But yeah, I'm really pulling for Fallout to do really well because that means more Fallout.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know what to say other than awesome.
I would think a positive reaction would be elicited from that.
Okay. Cool.
I also like Fallout 3.
Yeah. How far are you guys into Fallout right now?
Oh, like, I've played it for 9 hours, and I feel like I haven't even scratched the surface.
You haven't?
Yeah, and it's like, geez, this game is so, like, it keeps me such engagement level, like, high, and I have to, like, think about what I'm doing, like, whether I'm running out of ammo, gotta go back, gotta get healed, gotta get supplies, gotta do all this. Like, the level of engagement is just super high, and I can't wait to get into it even more. I don't have time.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sadly, just to give you an idea, I've just maxed out my second character.
Yeah.
There's a level 20 cap, and there's still a bunch. Going through the first time, I did a bunch of stuff, and then the second time I went through and tried to, like, specifically avoid doing all of that stuff and do, like, entirely different stuff.
Okay.
So I've done, like, almost completely different quests the entire time through, and there's still a bunch of stuff I've been hearing about that I haven't seen yet. I still haven't found dog meat. Who's a dog that follows you around.
I just got something better than dog meat. I'm super excited about this. Last night I just went to the underworld. I'm only like level 10 or something. And yeah, I did the whole thing and I ended up with this ghoul with a fatty shotgun who just follows me around. And it really helps because I'm an unarmed guy. So like if there's like a sniper somewhere, it takes me like a minute to run up to it. I'm pretty damaged by the time I get there. But he can just provide cover fire as I run in and take him out. It's excellent.
You got to dodge and weave, bob and weave. Don't let him draw a bead on you. Now, I'm playing unarmed with my second character too. What level are you at, Josh?
I just hit 10.
Okay. So you got a little ways to go yet before you can get this. But there's a perk called the Paralyzing Palm. That has a chance if you're completely unarmed, like, you know, no power fist or anything, but you can stun a guy for 30 seconds if you do a critical hit, which is really handy with like, you know, really, like, I've taken out Deathclaws doing this. You hit them a bunch until they get paralyzed, and then you drop a few landmines around them and just back off, wait for them to wake up.
Nice. I have a question. Last night I just got my first power fist, and, like, when I'm using VATS, I can't get as many moves out of it as I could when I was just using the spiked knuckles. Is the power fist not considered like an unarmed weapon?
It is an unarmed weapon. It just takes more action points to use because it's more powerful.
Okay.
But it is definitely using your unarmed skill to do it.
Okay, awesome.
And I was using that until I got the paralyzing palm. A perk, at which point, you know, I'm like, I think I'm going to start paralyzing people.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. Yeah. I haven't been using stealth at all either. It just seems like a hassle. It never works. They spot me from like 10 yards away anyways.
Well, it depends on how good your stealth skill is. And if you're, you know, coming right at them, they're going to see you. But my character is unarmed and stealth and lockpick and explosives. So I like to use stealth a lot because the first hit, if you successfully sneak up on somebody, first hit takes them down 90% of the time. So you get one hit kills. Also,
yeah, this is driving me crazy. I've only been able to play like 6 hours so far. I had to finish Underworld, so that's, and then we went into production. But whatever. It's very frustrating.
Also, if you get close enough to somebody to be able to pick their pocket. You know, when you're in sneak mode and you sneak up on somebody, you can hit E and pick their pocket. You can give them, and instead of, you know, taking stuff away from them, you can give them like a landmine or a hand
explosive
grenade.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's classic Fallout.
It is. It's one of the great carryovers from the classics.
I was wondering if you could do that. Yeah, that's good to hear.
They do a little ants and pants jig before their tent is closed.
Ants and pants. Have you decorated your house?
I bought one of the presets.
Okay. Is it cool? Yeah. What happens? They're expensive.
Yeah, they are. But later on in the game, you get
a lot of money.
So,
how do you get a house?
There are two houses. At least I'm pretty sure there are just two that you can get. Depending on what you do with the bomb in Megaton, there are two houses you can get out of that.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to resolve that quest one way or the other to get one. And then you can buy you can either decorate it yourself. You can collect a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Wasteland and place it around there, or you can buy a theme. Yeah. There's a Raider one, a Love Machine one, a pre-war theme, and it'll just populate your apartment with a bunch of stuff, that are pre-arranged for you, so you don't have to fiddle with it. And the reason I did that instead of decorating myself is because it's actually really difficult to arrange things the way you want them. It's like really, really difficult because you're using the Z key to pick things up,
Yeah.
But once you pick it up, you can't rotate it or anything. So you end up with a lot of stuff facing the wrong way or whatever, and then you're just nudging it a little bit, trying to get it in the right place. It takes forever.
And your feng shui is just not happening.
Right, right. But in my most recent game, I purchased the Love Machine theme and then modified it myself by adding a bunch of skulls and death claw hands and things like that. So
it's
very classy, kind of kinky.
Stop talking about Fallout 3, but
I don't see any reason to do that.
I was thinking it's an interesting thing that they gave perks every level. Because in the original, you only got it every three.
Right.
And I wonder if that's just a sign of them realizing gamers want this sort of positive feedback. Like, it's like a design of the times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we did discuss that with the designers. And they pretty much said what you said there. It's like people would level up. And it's like, what perk do I get to take? That was like the most exciting part about leveling up.
Mm-hmm.
And they initially had it as the same way. You get one every three levels, and they would watch people playing it in focus groups, and people would level up to level two and go, hey, where's my perk? It just kind of took the fun out of leveling up. It's debatable whether it's a better system right now or before, because the perks now are less potent. They don't do as much.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they kind of evened out the perk strength in order to.
They had to balance it, otherwise you'd be way overpowered. So, it's debatable. I'm sure somebody, like when the mod tools eventually come out, that somebody will almost certainly tweak it back to the classic method, and we'll be able to try it for ourselves then.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the other controversial thing they did was to roll the traits into perks. And I think I disagree with them on that that angle, because they said they didn't want you to have to pick traits in the beginning without like knowing what that would mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bloody Mess used to be a trait that you would pick before you went out into the world and did anything or killed anything.
Yeah.
So if you started a game and you picked Bloody Mess, everything would die in a spectacular fashion, and you would never see something like die regularly and then get to turn that on and see them die spectacularly. So they felt it had a greater effect that way. I liked the traits just because they had a positive and a negative in the original games. The night person perk, for example, or trait, sorry, it was initially a trait. It was set up so that if you at night you would have stat bonuses, mm-hmm. but in the day you would have stats or negative stat modifiers. So you gain something and you lose something. There are also things like, you know, one-handed specializations where, you know, you're better with one-handed weapons, but worse with two-handed. So I thought that added some extra flavor, if you will.
I remember being very enthralled by the trait choosing because of what the consequences were, exactly.
Right, but they do have a point, though, that it's much more interesting on subsequent playthroughs to do it that way. Mm-hmm. Rather than, like, this, you know, they're focusing on the initial experience. They want people to have a great time going through the first time. Because I guess they can't count on everybody playing multiple times through, because, you know, it is a major time investment. And, you know, from that perspective, I can see their logic. So, now we can move on from Fallout 3, unless anybody else has anything to add to that. EA had a little bit of a snafu with the shipping of Red Alert 3. Some of the, not all of them, but some people got CD codes or install codes that were missing a digit. You know, they got the 25-digit install keys, and some people had 24 digits, and so they'd enter it, and it's like, that's not valid, it's missing a number, you can't play. So EA's solution to this, you know, they did let you, you know, go and like submit your information, and they would give you a new code, but if that would take a little while. So what they ended up saying was, hey, here's the solution, guess that number.
Which,
you know, it came across as very, like, you know, it was on Dig. It's like, you know, worst customer service ever, and they have a point. But, you know, at the same time, this was kind of a stopgap solution. It was, you know, we want to get you into your game as soon as possible. This is the only way we can
do
that.
Do you know if it was true if you got three chances to guess before you would have to do the whole install over again? I had read that at some point.
I didn't see that. I don't think that's right, though. I can neither confirm nor deny that, but it doesn't sound right to me. Because generally, you enter the code before the install process actually kicks off, don't you?
No, it's both. It's like,
I don't know.
It's both ways all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, come on, people.
Just gotta pop some Mentats and freaking hack.
Wow.
If only there were a hacking game where you can.
Wow. Excellent reference.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it's also just the idea that, you know, people spend so much money for games, you know, and if you make a mistake of that magnitude, you know, start groveling, you know, if you want to keep your customers, if you want to, if you really are, you know, against piracy, if you really think piracy is a threat to the industry, don't drive people to it, you know. People love apologies, you know, and the whole business about, well, you can guess.
Well, I think context does matter in that. I mean, it the way it was presented in a lot of, like, all these stories on Dig and everything, it's like, EA says, you know, oh, you got to guess what it is. That was, you know, again, that was something where they wanted to get people into the game as soon as possible.
Sure. You know,
and they did have a method where you could, you know, submit your problem to customer service, and they would give you a new code, but that wouldn't happen immediately, because otherwise they would have, you know, thousands of people sending in, you know, fake requests, and they would be giving the game away for free basically to a bunch of people that even inconvenienced. So.
I'm very much a believer in, you know, there are other solutions. There's always hire a call center, for heaven's sake, you know, on an emergency basis, or give people a $5-$10 credits, or do something to acknowledge, yeah, we screwed up, and, you know, we believe in this platform, and we want you to be good customers. We want to reward you for being good customers, you know.
Right.
It's very frustrating.
I just hope that there were a lot of ones and A's as a missing digit.
Yeah, right. And I hate doing that. I hate, you know, hunting and pecking those little things in, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's
tap,
the worst.
Tap, 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 tap. And then you get one wrong.
And the worst thing about that, though, is that these, you know, it's broken up into the five boxes. So you can't, like, copy and paste your first 24 digits. You'd have to enter each one every time. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, at least copy and paste four times, you know, I guess five times each time you're attempting it. The major pain in the ass. I am grateful that my copy of Red Alert did not have that problem.
And it's, you know, it's really annoying because neither the Democrats nor the Republicans, you know, are taking any position on this. And, you know, nothing's getting done, you know. No wonder Congress has the rating they do right now, you know, the low approvals.
Very true.
They're not acting, you know?
I would have been so baffled. I would have sat there for literally hours being like steaming mad and not figured out that I had less like numbers. It wouldn't have even like occurred to me. Like I would have just been like invalid key. What are you talking about? I would have gotten a yelling match with my PC.
Yeah. You never seem to win those, do you?
No. Never.
You have a terrible track record. So, you know how a few weeks ago Activision announced they were not going to be publishing, I guess it was a little longer than that, they were not going to be publishing Ghostbusters or the Tupac game, or not Tupac, it was
50 Cent.
50 Cent, yeah. Or World in Conflict, the expansion. So they've explained something about that. There was an interview that MTV's blog did with Activision CEO Bobby Kotick, and he was saying that those franchises that they dropped didn't have the potential to be exploited. He used that word again, unfortunately. Didn't have the potential to be exploited as a yearly franchise. So you know they want to like Call of Duty, like they just put out. Or they're about to put out Call of Duty World at War, almost exactly a year after they put out Call of Duty 4. You know, they've got two different developers working on it and just, you know, pumping out those games. And apparently they don't feel that that Ghostbusters had that potential, which I think is kind of odd. I mean, you would think
I don't get that.
Although I do understand from the standpoint of they had so much of the original talent involved. They had, you know, they had all the original voice people, voice actors doing the voices. So that would be expensive. It would probably be difficult to retain Bill Murray to do that every year. That'd be pretty expensive. So I guess I understand that, but it's distressing that they don't want to do anything that they can't put out a game every year for. They can't rush a game out every year.
They can't put three games out a year in the case of Guitar Hero. I mean, it's interesting that exploit is a word that they feel is acceptable to use within the context of their business, you know?
Well, it's apparently used widely in, you know, talking about things with, like, investors, and you're exploiting your resources. It means that you're using them, you know, you're using them to
the maximum. Yeah, you say exploit to investors and they get boners.
Yeah. But in the you know context that we're used to hearing exploit, it does sound like, you know, pillage this thing for all that it's worth with a minimal. Well, I guess technically it's kind of the same thing. You know, you use it for all that it's worth, and using the minimum effort. But I think it's got slightly more of a positive connotation in the usage that he's going for.
No, I totally understand. I mean, you want to rally up with a brand that's successful and build on that success. Just for Activision, which is, you know, the most, you know, I guess, you know,
well, they're the biggest now.
They're the richest or whatever, how you want to put it, publisher out there. When's the last time they took a risk on a new license or a new game, a new IP? I really can't remember.
There's been a lot of like Tony Hawk games.
Yeah, this is an example.
I mean, you compare it to EA, which, you know, granted, I guess they just laid off 600 people, but they've been putting out a lot of new IPs in the past couple of years and, you know, making a pretty good effort, in my opinion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Dead Space, Rock.
I'm not involved, like, I don't talk on the OXM podcast, but I was listening to Dan Emmerich really eloquently put this in a good way, and he was saying, like, it's another example of how it reminds us that we love gaming so much. And this is a slap and reminder that it's a business, and it's a hardcore business for a lot of people who run these huge companies. And I guess that we're so like, well, why can't you just see the amount of love that Ghostbusters would have garnered, you know? But then they probably just want, they just don't see that. All they see is the exploited money.
Well, they just see the potential for a single successful game.
True.
Versus the potential for an entire successful series.
They're looking so far down the long run, yeah.
Right, they want to put all their resources into series that they can really make the most of.
But I mean, no one really cares about Tony Hawk anymore. You know what I mean?
But they're still selling them, right?
I don't know if they're doing well. So I mean, and how long is Guitar Hero going to last? Like, yeah. I don't know.
The last Tony Hawk was outdone by EA's new skate game, which you know introduced some new mechanics and innovative kind of perspective, and so I don't know. That's just one example.
And eventually, you do have to innovate in the series, but and you know if you have no competition, you don't innovate. So, so that it's good that they do that. But the Tony Hawk brand is so recognizable that you know it's probably not going to go away after one game that doesn't you know rule the genre. I mean, they'll come back with it next year and do something you know different and try and get back on top, right?
See, this announcement kind of falls straight in line with what Blizzard has always done. We've talked about it before, but I mean, they've straight up canceled games that they didn't think would have this sort of longevity of like Warcraft and Starcraft and all that sort of stuff. So I'm not as familiar with Activision, but with Blizzard, I mean, this seems perfectly normal. At least they sold it off so someone else can make it instead of just cancel it.
Right. Well, I mean, everybody cancels games they don't think are going to live up to their individual standards. This is kind of an extreme approach to you know banking on a game being successful in the long term rather than the short term. They're really prioritizing the creation of profitable series instead of profitable individual games, which you know I can understand from a you know that's a good strategy business wise. It's not so good for you know innovation, I don't think, but. As Evan mentioned, EA just laid off about 600 people, which we haven't heard exactly where those people came from. Apparently, it's a global thing. EA has people all over the world. So they cut.
Actually, sorry. They just announced today they're merging their casual brand with the Sims group.
Right. But that doesn't necessarily like we don't know exactly who they cut from. I mean, they're saying they've cut, across the board. Gamma Sutra reported that they did cut from EA LA and Pandemic. EA LA does a lot of the Command & Conquer stuff. Pandemic just did Mercenaries 2, and they're working on the Lord of the Rings Conquest game. Neither of those studios is closing down. It's just they've cut back their workforce a little bit, and they've probably you know like Evan said they're merging the EA Casual and EA Sims labels under EA Sims, which you know that, and they may have you know gotten rid of a few marketing people there. But the you know the bottom line is that they're not closing any studios down. They're just kind of tightening their belt a little bit. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, and this was as a result of losing about $300 million over their last fiscal year, which you know just astounds me that they can have so many you know big hit games and still lose.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But also just recently, THQ announced they had lost $115 million and they are closing 5 internal studios that they own. Which, as far as we can tell, has not affected any studios affected with PC associated with PC games, which is good because I would certainly hate to see anything bad happen to Relic. Their new Company of Heroes expansion, Tales of Valor, still seems to be on schedule. And we got a preview on that one in the which issue was that, Evan? Was that Holiday?
It would be Holiday, yes.
So that's the one with the Old Republic on the cover, which I guess people should be getting that one about now, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, somebody pointed out on the podcast thread last week that we had completely forgotten to talk about KOTOR, which
oh yeah,
or just yeah, Star, not KOTOR but TOR. But that was just because like we had seen it like a while back, and then we were under embargo, so we couldn't talk about it. And then everyone else was able to talk about it before we could because the schedule because
we didn't do a podcast that week.
Right. So we just kind of forgot that we hadn't talked about it.
Oops.
Yeah. So what does everyone think about The Old Republic?
I'll have to read your magazine about it before I form
huge lightsabers. Huge. Even I saw a picture of people LucasArts that were dressing up for Halloween, and they sort of parodied themselves by having like these gigantic lightsabers in their costumes.
Right. The few screenshots that are out there, the screenshots or the lightsabers are like poster tubes, it looks like. And they're like the handles, not the blade itself. The blade looks about the right size, but the handle is huge. It looks like you would need, you know, two hands to hold it. And they must have done that probably to you know make it obvious who's a Jedi and who isn't, just to be able to see the lightsaber from a long way away, even when it's off. But it does look a little bit goofy. I mean, like the main question that we've always been, you know, people always want to know about this game is you know, is it going to be Galaxies 2, which you know, BioWare says emphatically no, it is not. they have nothing against Galaxies, except, you know, they've just got a different way of going about it. The way they described it to me was that Galaxies was focused on like the small stuff, like that makes up the minute to minute gameplay. It's like what are people doing on moisture farms? What are people doing on Endor when the big stuff isn't happening? So they just wanted you to be able to live in the Star Wars universe, even though nothing of particular interest was going on. And meanwhile, with the Old Republic, what they're going for is all you do is the heroic stuff. You don't waste your time with you know, finding somebody sandals or you don't have this hero character running, you know, errands for somebody. It's like, oh, go pick up this key for me, you know. That doesn't make any sense. The lead writer of the game was telling me that their process for writing quests was when he got something in, or he got an idea in from one of his writers for a quest, he would go to the end, you know, read through it and go to the end and say, and then Darth Vader does X. And if the writer came back to him with something that, you know, makes them laugh when they're writing it or reading it out loud, then that doesn't make the cut, because, you know, they wanted to make sure that everything fits into what a Star Wars character would do.
Yeah. In other words, if Darth Vader goes and gets somebody's sandals, would not be successful.
No, Darth Vader does not seem like the sandal fetching type.
Yeah.
That's more of a Labrador Retriever kind of quest.
Indeed. I mean, I guess my gut reflex to the seeing loose like concept video of the game in action is the thing their flagship feature is story. Like there's going to be a story and it's going to be realistic and interesting. And that's going to be the centerpiece of the experience. But just visually, because they are adopting a more, I don't want to call it cartoon, it's not that simple.
Stylized
palette. If something is based in story and that's what it's emphasizing, I would sort of welcome a more realistic looking design, even if it wouldn't be as more accessible, which I understand. I mean, KOTOR had a really nice looking visuals. I mean, as dumbed down as they were for the, you know, compared to now, I would sort of appreciate something more in that direction than what I saw.
Well, I mean, we've been over this before with MMO art design. I mean, they have to design something that's going to last. Oh, not only does it have to last, but it has to run on like low end systems.
Right.
So it does you know, kind of put them in a spot there, because they can't do something like Crysis where they're shooting for what systems are going to be able to run in like 2 years, and like go for the high end on that. They have to go like for systems like today, like even a mid to low end system today. What can you run on that? And then they have to project, you know, years out in the future to you know, come up with an art style that will look, you know, at least decent a few years down the line, because they're not going to, there is so much content in an MMO that they're not going to be able to revise it and update it, and they can't produce a whole bunch of levels of detail for as you're sliding the graphic scale up and down, because there's just so much of it. It's a real practical hurdle that they have to get over. I certainly understand why the art style wouldn't really do it for you. I mean, it's a little bit funky looking in places, but remember, there is a long way to go still.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, definitely, I agree with you. And it's just a matter of, I mean, I'm kind of safely assuming they're going to put in some level of space travel, if not space combat, and I definitely want to see that in action.
Right. They wouldn't confirm or deny that, but come on. It's got to be in there.
And yeah.
If they learn nothing else from the launch of Galaxies and, you know, people are getting there, it's like, I can't own a spaceship? What the hell? This isn't Star Wars. I think that would probably be it, that you have to have a space component at launch. But, yeah, again, they wouldn't go on record as saying that is in the game at that point. But like in the screenshots, they had like landing pads and which you know could in theory be set pieces. I mean, they had that in Galaxies for like the starports where you went to automatically be flown to somewhere. But I think it's safe to assume.
Yeah, and one other thing they're trying to change from Galaxies is they're making the Jedi a playable class, right? So it won't try and be an obscure kind of few people.
Right. Well, I mean, they have the advantage over Galaxies. But when Galaxies, like, it always baffled me why they set Galaxies in the time that they did. They set it between Star Wars A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, which made no sense at all, because for there to be any Jedi at all is an egregious breach of Star Wars canon. So that's not good. And it's just supposed to be Luke, Vader, and Yoda at that point. How can any player be a Jedi? So it seemed like such an easy fix. Like they could just set it after Return of the Jedi in kind of the expanded universe territory where the rebels or the New Republic and the Imperial Remnant were kind of on equal footing anyway. It didn't make any sense to have players fighting a war that was supposed to be as lopsided as it was at that point, as it was supposed to be when it was just the rebels and the Empire. But that didn't make any sense at all. With the Old Republic, they've set it 3,600 years before the original Star Wars, so they can have as many Jedi and Sith as they want, and they're much more free to make up their own stories as they go and be able to give people a really cinematic experience and tell stories without being hamstrung by where Han Solo is supposed to be that day.
So that kind of begs the question: do you think they'll tease certain elements of the universe that we see in KOTOR? Do you think we'll see like Revan's father? I mean, that's kind of a really general example, or things like that.
It's actually after.
That's
KOTOR.
Right. Okay,
it's 300 years after KOTOR.
Okay. So do you think we'll see direct references to the KOTOR games?
I mean, they were shy about that too, but they would say there are certain characters that don't age, in our story there is some art of an HK droid, which was one of the favorite characters from KOTOR was the wise ass droid. Kept talking about killing all the people, there could be other crossovers, but I wouldn't expect there to be a whole lot.
Yep.
And who else could really survive 300 years? And there are like Yoda's race can obviously live a long time, but I don't even remember the name of the character. There was like a pink Yoda in that, wasn't there?
Well, Wookiees live like 1,000 years or something, don't they?
I don't know if they live that long.
Let's speculate.
Do they have to get their hair cut?
Wookiees?
Yeah, I think it's like, more of a, like a Samson situation.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
But another little tidbit they gave me was that there can be no Wookiee Jedi. That's an edict that LucasArts that Lucas has handed down. There can be no Wookiee Jedi.
It singes their fur.
Right, right.
So the sabers, yeah.
So real quick, we should get a couple more items to cover. Bill Roper, who of Hellgate London fame, has been hired on at Cryptic, the guys that are doing the Champions Online and Star Trek Online MMOs. Hopefully, bring some lessons learned from the Hellgate fiasco with him. Speaking of, we can pretty much put a fork in Hellgate. There was a rumor that it might be extended a little bit after the end of January deadline. But yeah, that's pretty much been quashed, at least in the U.S. and Europe. Stardock has announced a new game called Elemental War of Magic, which is a turn-based strategy fantasy game. Evan, you got that info in front of you?
Yes, I do, actually. Stardock dropped by to give us a look at that in addition to Demigod, just an update on Demigod, which is looking great. Elemental is just, it's way far out. It's February 2010 at this point. But basically, it's trying to be a turn-based fantasy civilization. You think it's fair to say that, Dan? I mean,
I wouldn't call it civilization.
Yeah, it's maybe less political than that.
But it's more like Might and Magic stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess that sounds about right, actually. Just to pick out a couple of the key features, it's really playing up this idea of user-generated content. Integrated modding will allow players to submit maps and items and creatures and races, technologies, spells, environments. So it's kind of an open sourcey kind of situation there. That's cool. It says it'll run natively on 64-bit Vista, which is interesting.
Well, that's kind of where the whole industry is going. It has some interesting concepts like your character is like a really powerful magic guy, and then you can create other strong minions, but you have to like give them a piece of your magical power. So you're diminishing your magical power by giving it to them, and if they die, that goes away. So yeah, it's got some interesting concepts. They're also doing some neat things with city building, and we're doing a preview on that soon, right, Evan?
I think so. Kind of need some more information from them, but I mean, public beta is slated for June 2009, so we're still way out.
We'll be covering it sooner or later. You can expect to see something on that. Mm-hmm. Last news item for the day is the curtain has been at least partially lifted on the new Intel Core i7 CPUs.
Ooh, they're very sexy. This is probably the biggest jump since they went from Pentium to the Core. Core 2 series. They sent us kits for testing already, and there's no question about it. It's a huge performance jump, and we actually already have two Core i7 systems in for review, which you can read about in the January issue, which will be coming at you sooner than you think. I know it's very bracing, January 09 already. And in that issue, there's no question that these processors are super fast. There's going to be three Core i7 processors running at three different clock speeds, topping out at 3.2 gigahertz.
How many cores do they have? Is it four right now?
Four. They're all four quad core.
Interesting.
And you'll be what we're looking at in these system reviews is, you know, how much of a bump do gamers get? But I can definitely tell you that these babies are fast, unbelievably fast. One thing that speeds them up is they now have an integrated memory controller, so the whole front side bus thing is gone. Now memory transfers occur much, much faster. Anything new like this is going to be expensive. So you need to brace for that.
And not just the chip itself that's expensive, but when you make a technology obsolete, that means you need a new motherboard.
Absolutely, these do have a new socket. Ouch! It's called my socket. It's called socket LGA 1366. So no, you can't drop a Core i7 into your current motherboard, and you will even likely need new RAM because the X58 chipset requires DDR3.
Yikes.
But don't panic if you just bought, just upgraded your system. These are brand new. They are fast, but you know what? Your dual core, your quad cores are doing just fine right now. And prices are going to come way down in the next few months, as they always do. Plus, this is also going to push down prices on the whole Core 2 series of chips, which, as our readers know, are great, great products. So everybody wins. We love those situations.
Right. All right. It's fourth week.
By the, I'm sorry. By the way, systems, I think, will be going on sale November 17th. So you can that's when you'll see all the system launches with Core i7.
Just in time for Left 4 Dead. Awesome.
Dude, so it's, so yeah. excited.
So it is fourth week, so I'm going to have to banish Logan from the podcast so that he can go finish some stuff.
God bless you, every single one of you.
Bye, Logan.
Bye.
And that leaves the four of us to take a few questions.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is John in Kansas City. I've been listening to the podcast for about a year now, and I enjoy it every single week. I do not miss it at all. My question for you is, I picked up Stalker Clear Sky. Haven't played it yet. Haven't loaded it onto my machine yet. But I was wanting to know, do I need to play Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl first to appreciate Clear Sky? Just wanted your all's opinion on that. That's a great podcast, and a note to Kristen. Kristen, it was great to meet you at the Showdown Land in Peoria a few weeks ago, and it was really awesome to be able to pick your brain for an hour. Enjoyed meeting you. You're a class act. Thanks, everyone. Take care. Bye.
It's a zombie. He's picking brains. So, Andy, that sounds like a question for you. I think you're the only person here who's played all the way through Clear Sky.
Yes. And did you guys play the first one?
Yes.
I played a chunk of it, but not all the way through.
Okay. So, the fundamental difference, I think, between Stalker Clear Sky and Shadow of Chernobyl is that Clear Sky is a little bit more, as people say, on the rails. It definitely keeps you moving forward and forward and forward, and it's more of a traditional, here's your weapons. It will drop a lot more ammo than in Shadows of Chernobyl, so you can kind of, you don't have to like worry about going back to towns to resupply. And the only problem with that is it's hard as hell. And even if you wanted to go back and resupply, there's not a lot of resources and money and stuff, so you don't really get all the fancy armor that you need. And by the end of the game, I was really, really struggling, but I was able to make it through, but I still had to quick save and quick load after almost like every kill. And it got really hard at the end of Clear Sky. And there's points when you're so far out in the world that even if you wanted to go back, it would take forever almost, and it just didn't seem worth it to go back and try and like buy more armor, because number one, I didn't have the money. Number two, it was so far away, and I just walking all the way back, I would have to go through areas that would probably use up all my ammo and consequently not be worth going back. So it was frustrating. It was worth it to see some of the stuff that ties into the original game, like Strelok. Kind of gives you some fun information about Strelok. The end game of Clear Sky. The only way I beat it was it bugged out on my system, or else it would have taken me. I don't even know if I could have done it the way it was. So Shadow of Chernobyl is a more dynamic game, and it's a more open world experience, and I think the story is a little bit more compelling. But Clear Sky is kind of fun. And I like some of the things they do with the bullets. The bullets drop out of the air. You can see them falling. There's like the explosions have shockwaves that hurt you. I don't know. There's like little things that are awesome, but then there's a lot of stuff that's like not so awesome. I don't know.
I think the main question was, do you need to play? It's a prequel, first of all. So
it is, yeah.
So yeah, but you think it's self-contained enough that you don't need need to play?
I would say it's different enough and self-contained enough that it's a different experience it's sort of like a different experience with the same engine. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, it doesn't really matter. I think Shadows of Chernobyl is a better game.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
It's Jared from Long Beach, California. What's the deal with ragdolls? Why are they still flying around, getting stuck in geometry and folding in half like it's 99? Why is the primary focus of almost every game ever, killing things, still portrayed so unrealistically? You're going through the game when the guy you just hit with your shotgun goes pinwheeling through the air 20 feet. The video game industry is full of tremendously smart people, so why has this not been fixed yet?
Well, I'm thinking it would be because shooting people and having them fall down gets real boring real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one thing I'm loving about Fallout 3 is when you kill him in slow motion and the VATS is unarmed, like, I punch the guy and he does, like, a somersault in the air and slams into the wall. Like, it's more fun, in my opinion. It makes you feel more powerful.
Yeah.
It does, like, hitting somebody and seeing them fly through the air and, like, bounce off a wall or... It's the same thing with action movies. It's like all those deaths are like ridiculous. So, but they do it because it looks cool, is the reason. As far as the technical aspects of the question, like why are they still folding in half and stuff, we have no idea. we're not programmers. But you know, we got to assume that if it was an easy fix, somebody would have fixed it. Yeah, you know, so some of them are better than others. So there's obviously things that you can do to make it better, but I got to imagine that there are technical reasons why it's still a little bit glitchy.
I'm trying to think of a game that does it better than, or like sort of keeps it more realistic than others, but I can't come up with any.
And realistic in terms of like how far people fly back when they get
like
shot, or
what happens to the rag dolls of their bodies, or death animations.
I think Call of Duty was pretty good, wasn't it?
Fear was certainly up there for me. Maybe.
Yeah, that good physics. I don't know if it, like, you know, I don't know if it was exactly realistic. I mean,
oh, definitely not.
People being pinned to the wall with stakes. I mean, that doesn't technically work in a physical sort of way.
But it is awesome because you can make them into pinatas.
Yes, you can. Especially if you crouched and got up right next to them and aim up and catch mm-hmm. like catch them like in the chin and pin them to the ceiling.
Bingo.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Hi, it's Kazarigian from Peoria, Illinois, and you had another excellent podcast last week. And after listening to it, I had a couple of quick questions. One is, as far as Left 4 Dead is concerned, I was curious about Respawn, whether that was even available, and if so, how that would work for the survivors. But my bigger question is around StarCraft. I was very concerned when I heard that the races, if you will, are being introduced one at a time, potentially a year apart. Does that mean when it's originally released, the multiplayer will be limited to only the Terrans if they're released first? Will the Zerg and will the Protoss be available at least as AI for instance, standalone multiplayer, if you will? Confused, concerned how that's actually going to work. Been looking forward to both these titles, and I'd love to know. Thanks again for your excellent work. Appreciate it, and the great mag. Bye.
Okay, StarCraft first. The first episode to come out will be Wings of Liberty, which is the Terran campaign. All of the races will be included in that. The multiplayer will be the full-featured multiplayer. You'll be able to play as Terrans, Protoss, or Zerg in multiplayer. So don't worry about that. When you buy Wings of Liberty, you'll be getting the full multiplayer experience. They have not decided yet whether the second and third parts, which will have the Protoss and Zerg campaigns, whether those will be standalone or not yet, or what the pricing will be on that. But the main feature of those will be the campaigns. So yeah, it's not. You have very little to worry about there. They're going to give you the full multiplayer experience. For Left 4 Dead, that's a very good question actually, because the players the survivors do not they're actually very hard to kill. You have to knock them down several times. You have to really concentrate on one guy the zombies have to concentrate on one guy to really kill him. Because the other survivors can help him up even if he does get knocked down, which takes a lot of abuse. So if they eventually do kill a survivor, then you have to the survivors have to find the another survivor locked in a closet somewhere, and they'll be able to see him through a wall. They'll be able to see his outline, so they'll know where he is. They just have to get to him and open the door, and they'll find him. He's wounded. It's the same guy, coincidentally, that was just killed. He looks exactly like him. The player who was knocked out will be able to rejoin midway through a mission.
Yeah, that's not based on time as much as it's like progressing a certain distance, right?
I'm actually not sure how they do it.
Maybe a little both. I don't think it's time based.
It doesn't seem to be a respawn timer at all.
There's probably some randomness to it. It's using the same, you know, director AI to place the survivors that places all the zombie respawns. So it probably takes into account how well you're doing, how fast you're moving, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to encourage everyone to refer to that respawn as being R. Kelly'd. Because he had that song, Trap in the Closet. I don't know. That's all.
Wow.
Sorry.
That was amazing, by the way.
Hey, PC Gamer. This is Austin from Texas. I just want to throw out the question to all of you to see what y'all thought about Fallout down to the last detail, and also, even if there weren't many, the cons that you saw in the game. Love the podcast. Keep it going.
I covered Fallout 3 quite a bit already, like how it's awesome down to the last detail.
Yeah.
And we actually covered some of the cons as well. I would like to add that there do seem to be some significant crashing issues with the PC version.
Really?
I have had some crashes, and we did call that out in the review, and it cost us a few points, which is unfortunate. But the good news is, while we've been recording this podcast, a patch was released. So hopefully that will address some of the crashing. I haven't tested it out yet. But the nice thing about Fallout is that it automatically saves every time you go through a door. So you lose very little progress if it crashes on you. And most of the crashes I've had have been like indoors. It doesn't seem to have any major problems with crashing when you're just out wandering the wasteland where there are no automatic save points. So I've had it crash, you know, fairly regularly, but have had no problem playing through the game twice.
Yeah. We don't need to, I mean, just to add one more con to the list, we don't need to debate it too often. I kind of feel like I want Bethesda to hire some new character animators and maybe some new character modelers. As much as like I understand, like the world is built so you can do anything, kill anybody, and you have to allow for that. Just some of the scripting and the combat and the way characters just kind of turn at you and just don't have as much life to them as, you know, as they do in other games. I mean,
it's definitely a fair criticism with the animations. I mean, some of the walking animations and stuff don't look quite right. Some, like, I think Brotherhood of Steel people in particular, when you're talking to them, will sometimes be doing like a real like heaving shoulder kind of thing. Like they're just, right, you know, going, their shoulders just going up and down, and you know, it's like as if they're like completely out of breath, like the entire time they're talking to you, even though they're not doing anything. So, you know, it's just little touches like that. It's polish, really, and the amount of polish you can put into a game is, you know, limited by your team size and how long you're willing to delay the game after it's you know, for all intents and purposes done. You know, maybe for the next one, you know, if this one keeps selling as well as it has been, maybe they'll be willing to put more time and effort into polish, you know, because they can afford it. people like Blizzard and Valve push things way back because they you know, they're doing fine financially. They can afford to you know, put some extra polish on things and you know, reap the benefits from that when it's finally ready. Bethesda is a smaller outfit, so I guess they don't have that luxury.
Mm-hmm. And the facial modeling was certainly improved.
Oh,
thankfully.
Yeah, there's indisputably quite a few bugs in Fallout. I haven't run into a single broken quest though, you know, it's just little things that you know, it's like, well, that shouldn't be, but it doesn't like ruin the experience for you. Mm-hmm. Besides, it wouldn't be a Fallout game if there weren't a bunch of bugs. I mean, anybody who's played Fallout 1 and 2 has seen plenty of bugs.
I was going to say, I haven't had a chance to get too far into the game. The one thing that I sort of went, is when I hit the third-person view. I was kind of hoping to play the game sort of from a third-person from sometimes, and no way. Just don't go there.
It's doable. It's better than it was in Oblivion. Did you ever try that?
I liked it in Oblivion. I thought it yeah.
Really? You think this is worse than Oblivion?
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the world in which you're put in, that the way it looks when you're walking around it, or the character. I can't put my finger on it.
I'll tell you what it is. It's like there's a strafe animation, there's a walking forward animation, but there's no like diagonal walking animation if you're going like forward
so
and to the right or
ice
left.
Skating.
Like you're just, yeah, it looks kind of goofy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not that big of a deal because, whatever, the gameplay's fine from first person, so.
Right.
Yeah, and pretty much the only time I used third person was just to, you know, check out my gear, see what my new armor looked like or my new
hat,
you know. So I didn't really have any desire to play from third person, and you see it in third person when you go into VATS anyway. So there's plenty of opportunity to see what you look like.
Definitely. So it's not that big of a deal. The gun animations are awesome too, a lot better than I expected.
Yeah.
I guess my other complaint would be having played through all the way with an energy weapon specialist. When you get up to a high level and you're just blasting people, like one-shotting people all over the place, the death animations start to get a little bit repetitive because even when you switch from laser to plasma, the effect is very similar. It's the model like turns bright red or bright green. There's some particle effects. They fall down and fade out. It would have been cool if they had, like, you know, you shoot somebody and they do that, except they leave a skeleton behind, or, you know, just a little more variation in there, because you're doing it a lot. You're killing a lot of people. What have you been playing?
Well, I just finished up Call of Duty World at War for review. Finished up Peggle Knights a couple days ago. That was a big deal.
Yeah, but did you finish the challenges?
I started on those. I've done about seven of them, yeah. And otherwise, I'm playing tons of TF2 but like almost exclusively as a spy.
Oh, wow.
I gotta say, it's one of the most gratifying things. You can definitely see some of the mechanics carrying over into Left 4 Dead. I mean, we know that Team Fortress 2 team was working on Left 4 Dead a little bit, but I mean, playing a spy, like, you have to basically, if you're not familiar with it, you're disguising yourself so you look like other, you know, other classes on the opposite side, so your enemies see you as friendly, and you can also turn yourself invisible. So it requires like some amount of acting and like patience, and there's just a lot of cool anticipation associated with it. It's fun. That's all.
Andy, what have you been playing?
I'm always trying to get through the challenges still in Peggle Knights. They're a lot effing harder than the first one.
Yeah.
So when you finally finish the challenges of Peggle Knights, you have to let me know, and I will praise you.
Dude, those duels are vicious.
Nah, dog. Wait till you get to six unique style shots. Unique style shots. I've been stuck on this for 2 weeks. Anyway.
I kind of ignored that one, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I'm stuck on that, and I've been and Fallout 3 when I have like a whole day to dedicate to it, because none of this like spend an hour on it. I want to like sit down and spend 12 hours on it. It's the only way I can do it.
If I were you, Josh, I would be allocating all of that Peggle Knights time to Fallout.
Well, the Peggle Knights thing I can sort of play at work, you know.
Touche.
Right.
Well done.
Josh, what about you?
I've actually been playing a lot of World of Warcraft. My roommate from down south, we're leveling up some druids together, so I'm spending a lot of time trying to keep up with him because I'm a bit more busy. And then I've been playing a bit of SAS, Secure Tomorrow.
Oh, dude.
How is that game?
Is it shovelware?
Yeah, pretty much. It's real short, and it's like you have two teammates, and they're invincible. And as long as you keep moving forward so that they keep moving forward too, they'll basically kill everybody. So all you have to do is not die, and you can beat it. And it took maybe like only a few hours to play through. It's short.
That's awesome. I actually got that in the mail too. Like when I used to be a I'm still on these weird like freelancer lists and people send me stuff. So I got that, and I got this idea of like reviewing that game as like in our backspace column, but writing it from the perspective of like a military special ops person, and how like inaccurate it is and whatnot. I don't know. Seems kind of goofy.
That'd be pretty fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the one cool thing is they have. I haven't played a lot of games like this since like Rainbow Six was out, so I don't know if this is common in games. But they have the stack system where like they line up on the door and you have to take your position. Then they throw a flashbang into the room. And then you have maybe like 5 to 10 like Matrix slow-mo style seconds where you just go in there and rip So that's awesome.
So that's what flashbangs do.
Yeah, it's
slow down time.
There's like a big like bass sound effect to let you know that you're in slow-mo, like boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And everything sounds all like bassy, and that's cool.
Dude, I hope they have those for our boys over in the desert.
this is SAS, so it'd be the British boys over in the desert.
Oh, word, yeah.
As for me, I've just been playing a bunch of, let's see, since last week. Because I already made fun of Spider-Man Web of Shadows, didn't I? So, I guess most of my free gaming time has been going into Fallout. I'm still.
So you're in your second playthrough, huh? Or third?
Yeah,
now?
I'm second. I'm almost done with it. I've maxed out my character, which means it's time. Okay, it's like I get like a little ways into the main quest, and then I go and do a bunch of other random stuff, and then I maxed out my character. I was like, oh, okay, time to finish the game. So I'm in the process of finishing it up. Because I don't know, for me, I think in that game, the side quests, just going around doing side quests, is more entertaining, I think, than the main quest.
It's all main quest to me.
Yeah. right now I'm looking over the patch note, which apparently it's not working with my Steam install. They'll probably patch it on Steam a little bit later. Hopefully by later this evening.
I mean, I like hearing that you've already played through it twice, and it's already keeping you super enthralled. And
oh yeah, it's
I can't
it's,
wait
yeah.
to play through it again. Like already, I'm thinking about all the decisions I'm gonna do differently.
Yep.
Oh yeah, I already have like my next guy planned out. He's gonna be like small guns, repair, and science, and I'm excited about my next character already.
I know, right?
Repair is really useful because you can your weapons are much more effective. Because you can beef up their stats more because if you keep them in higher repair, they'll do more damage.
Okay, I was talking to Nathan from Maximum PC, and he didn't really like repair, and he didn't think there's a lot of guns to make, but like the schematics out there that I've seen look really cool. I'm excited to actually make them.
The repair skill doesn't actually influence making guns. I don't think it just controls how much you can improve the weapons and armor that you're using. When you pick up two of the same gun, you can have you done the repair thing at all?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It just raises the amount that you can repair it because with low repair skill, it just you can only get up to a certain point, and beyond that it's no good. But if you get up to 100% repair, you can make your guns much more effective.
Yeah, and this is kind of sad, but I'm super excited about fixing those pipes.
I was going to bring that up.
Because it's just like one of those things where it's like, oh, I want to know what happens if I fix that. I want to know like what happens. I'm kind of a completionist when it comes to games. So
you're
going to
be, if you're a completionist, you're going to be at this a long time.
That's what I figure, but it's fun.
All right, I think that's going to have to do it for us today. We got an issue to finish. So you can go to gamesradar.com/PC to subscribe. There's a tab in the middle left side, middle sidebar. You can email us at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com with your MP3 questions, or you can call us. Andy, what is the number? I will never, ever remember it.
It's 1-877-404-1337, extension 724.
He always remembers it.
A radio voice.
Call in the next 5 minutes and receive a Fortigaunt action figure.
For real? I'm calling.
Yeah. Disclaimer, may not actually receive action figure.
Not an actual guarantee.
Yeah. If you call in the next 5 minutes, maybe, but this podcast won't actually be up until much later this evening, so your odds are pretty thin.
Hooray, loopholes.
So for myself, for Evan Lottie, Josh August... Josh Augustine, Andy Bauman, and the now departed Logan Decker. We will see you next week.
We're holding guns to our own heads.
Ah, it's a good way to get work done.
Usually, you only have to, you only have one hand, but, you know.
It's the threat of suicide motivates very well.
What?
Yes.
I've got a whole
Have you guys seen the movie The Happening?
No.
No.
I don't like that guy.
Yeah, us and the rest of America have not seen that.
I know, I just watched it. It wasn't very good, but it is kind of disturbing just because, like, something's happening that makes everybody commit suicide and is really kind of creepy.
Hmm.
But the movie itself was pretty bad, so I don't recommend it.
fourth week is happening.
Fourth week, the fourth inning.
What should I choose?
That's for fourth week two.
Yeah,
when Logan said like, oh, sorry.
No. What?
Okay. When Logan was talking about like socket 1366, it just made me think of Emperor Palpatine and like execute order 66. I don't know. Just the way they present that part of the movie is so funny. All the Jedi dying. Execute order 66.